Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. September has been named Childhood Cancer Awareness Month to bring awareness to the leading cause of death by disease for children under the age of 14. In this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast, we're chatting with Dr. Tanya Gruber, the new chief of pediatric hematology, oncology, and stem cell transplantation at Stanford Children's Health, about how the field of pediatric cancer has evolved over the last decade and where the landscape is headed in the future, thanks to advances in treatments like immunotherapy. Gruber also discussed the idea that the late effects of treatment need to be taken into consideration when creating a therapeutic plan for a patient, and offer some advice to newly diagnosed patients and their families.
So to start, can you talk a bit about how the field of pediatric cancer has shifted over the past few decades?
Yeah, so the field has shifted significantly, both in terms of therapeutics as well as diagnostics. Historically, chemotherapy, of course, has been used to treat pediatric cancers. And in the current era, we're incorporating more and more approaches which we collectively call immunotherapeutic approaches. And in these types of treatments, we're actually harnessing the patient's immune system to help eliminate the tumor. And that can happen through a variety of ways, whether it be a drug that's provided to the patient to potentiate the immune response versus, in some cases, we'll actually remove immune cells from the patient, modify those cells so that they can better attack the malignancy directly. And then there are also approaches where we have monoclonal antibodies. Antibodies are something your body normally makes to fight infections. And there have been many monoclonal antibodies developed that directly bind to the malignancy and help eliminate it through the use of the immune system as well. So that's been a major advance therapeutically, and immunotherapeutic approaches have become more and more prevalent in pediatric oncology. In terms of diagnostics, we went from having very limited understanding of what are all the mutations that are that occur within a pediatric cancer, what is actually causing the cancer to grow without any checks. And now with next generation sequencing approaches, we've been characterizing pediatric cancers at the molecular level quite comprehensively. And that's been critical in understanding what drives the cancer, which is going to allow us to develop more targeted therapies that can hopefully have less side effects, but still treat the cancer effectively.
So you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but what kind of, when it comes to these, you know, treatments that affect the immune system, what kinds of needs do these immunocompromised children or patients with pediatric cancer, what kind of needs do they have, especially when there's a pandemic going on?
So when we talk about potentiating the immune system to recognize cancer, that sort of already tells you that the patient's immune system isn't really working optimally. So that can be for a variety of mechanisms in pediatric cancers. For those patients that have acute lymphoblastic leukemia, that's actually a cancer of a specific cell type that's part of the immune system. And having that diagnosis in and of itself, those patients, their immune systems aren't working optimally. And then when you think about it, we are then treating those cancers with chemotherapy, which also suppresses the immune system. And that creates quite a problem in terms of having infectious complications. One of the biggest side effects that we see in our patients are infectious complications. And so when you're in the middle of a pandemic, it's very important that we protect our patients from developing COVID-19 and any viral infection for that matter. In particular, viral infections, we don't have a lot of good medications that can eradicate those infections. We do have quite a bit of medications to fight bacterial infections and fungal infections, but viral infections have been tougher to eliminate with medications. And so it's important to protect our patients from getting the infection in the first place. And I think it's interesting, many of our patients have always worn masks during times of treatment to protect them from infection. And now suddenly they're in an environment where everybody else is wearing masks. It used to be my patients were the ones wearing the masks and we were all walking around without masks. And now I think the tables have turned and they're in a setting where everybody is wearing masks. So it's important that we protect them from getting infections. In cases of infections where we have good vaccines, for example, the flu vaccine, it's important that they get that vaccine. Even if their response to the vaccine is suboptimal, it does provide some protection from the influenza virus. And we need to do everything possible to prevent them from getting these infections, which can be deadly. And an infection that occurs in one of our patients can be more severe than in you or I who have a functioning immune system. So it would not be uncommon for a patient to develop influenza and end up in the intensive care unit, which would be very rare for someone with an intact immune system.
Okay, so when it comes to treatment, why is it important that children aren't just treated like small adults?
As I mentioned previously, we've become better and better at understanding what are the mutations that underlie pediatric malignancies, and those mutations aren't always the same mutations that cause adult cancers. And so the treatments that work on the adult in the adult setting aren't necessarily effective in the pediatric setting. So it's important that we look at the cancer and the biology of the cancer in order to develop treatments that are effective for that cancer. There are many wonderful drugs that have been developed on the adult side that have been developed for very specific mutations. An example of that is the IDH2 mutation, for which there's a new effective treatment for adult AML. And that mutation is actually exceedingly rare in pediatric AML, roughly 2% of patients. So the companies, the pharmaceutical companies that are developing many of these drugs for the adult population, those aren't necessarily going to be drugs that are applicable in the pediatric oncology setting. So it's important that we work with pharmaceutical companies and in academia to conduct preclinical studies looking at new therapeutics that are coming out on the market or working with pharmaceutical companies to look at drugs that haven't yet been developed to try and identify those that are going to be effective in the pediatric setting.
So then how do you involve children and their families in the discussions around their treatment?
So when a patient is first diagnosed and we discuss treatments with the family, I go into quite a bit of detail about the treatment that we use, why we use that treatment, and the side effects of those treatments. And by educating the family so that they understand, then they're more likely to comply with that treatment for the patient. And frequently, you know, what can be upsetting for the families in terms of side effects that are seen, there are reasons for those side effects. And if they understand, the reasons and they understand why we have to utilize this treatment, then they're better able to handle these unfortunate aspects of cancer care. And I think understanding is powerful. And the more a family understands, then the better you're able to actually treat the child. And in particular, in pediatric oncology, we don't just treat the child. The entire family is part of our treatment because they're all taking care of the child. It's not just a single relationship with the patient. It's really a relationship with the family.
Yeah. So now you touched on this a little bit earlier, the use of CAR T therapy, how that's growing in many cancer types. What can you say about the emerging possibilities? Can you expand a little bit more about how that's being used in pediatric cancer?
So CAR Ts were first approved for acute lymphoblastic leukemia, which is the most, I should say, relapsed acute lymphoblastic leukemia, which is the most common cancer in childhood. But as the field develops, they're developing more and more CAR Ts that can actually target solid tumor and brain tumor malignancies. And I think that's where the field is heading, to really expand the number of cancers for which CAR Ts can be effective.
Children who experience cancer at a young age can sometimes have lingering side effects from treatment years after they're declared cancer-free. How does that factor into the treatment decisions that you make for each patient?
So that's a great question. So we call that collectively, that field, late effects. And it's a very active field in pediatric oncology because they're so young when they're diagnosed, when they're cured, they have an entire lifetime ahead of them. And what are the long-term effects of some of the chemotherapeutics that we're using? And one of the things we're trying to do is decrease chemotherapy that has some of these toxicities and replace chemotherapy with approaches such as immunotherapy and the use of those in addition to some more targeted drugs, with the idea that those may potentially have less long-term side effects than chemotherapy. I think it's a young field. We still actually don't know what the long-term effects are of many of our small targeted molecules that we're bringing into the clinic. I think it's an important area that's going to be an active research focus moving forward for the field of late effects. And we don't really know the long-term late effects of CAR-Ts. You know, in some cases, the CAR-Ts that are infused into patients, they don't persist. But in other patients, you can see persistence of those CAR-Ts. And so there are acute side effects of that process, depending on what the CAR-T is targeting. So for example, in acute lymphoblastic leukemia, you do see what we call a B-cell aplasia, meaning the B-cells are very low, and B-cells help protect you from infections. And so right now, I think there's a focus on the acute side effects, but what's going to happen long-term for these patients is another question and an area that we need to study carefully, I think.
So now you touched on, you know, the past and what's kind of brought us up to this point in the treatment of pediatric cancer. How do you see the future of this treatment area kind of evolving in the next decade or so?
So I see a lot of these newer treatment approaches sort of being integrated together. I truly don't think we're going to get rid of chemotherapy. I think it's very effective. And I think we're always going to have an element of chemotherapy in treating many of our pediatric malignancies. But what I do think is going to happen is we're going to integrate more frequently targeted therapeutics, targeted small molecules, as well as immunotherapeutic approaches. So it's going to be much more of an integrated approach. And I think in doing that, we're going to get a better handle on these malignancies and cure more patients. An example of sort of integrating treatment, we used to pilot new drugs as a single agent in early phase clinical studies. So we would give a patient a single drug that was relapsed and see if it worked. And you can imagine if we're using three or four chemotherapy drugs in a newly diagnosed patient, why would one drug work in a relapsed patient? And that was recognized many years ago, and we've begun to shift how we evaluate new drugs and look at new small molecules in the context of a multi-agent chemotherapy backbone. And I think that nicely illustrates the concept that no single drug is going to cure cancer. And we need to use all of the promising drugs available to us together in the right combination in order to cure our patients in the long run.
That's great. So lastly, what advice would you give to a family who recently received a diagnosis of their own?
You know, it's devastating to learn that your child has cancer. And I would encourage the families to reach out and get, if they're in a small center, to reach out and to some of the larger centers where a large number of pediatric cancer patients are treated. I do think very effective therapy can be given at some of the smaller centers. The Children's Oncology Group has been amazing in that they involve many small centers throughout the U.S. in their clinical trials, which are wonderful trials that are curing many of the patients. So while you can get very good treatment at some of the smaller centers, I do think it's in their best interest to speak with physicians at the larger centers and ensure that the child is getting the care that they need to get. And, you know, some of the very rare malignancies that are rare in pediatrics that even large centers don't see very frequently, it becomes more imperative that you reach out to physicians with expertise in that particular cancer. They exist, there's a very nice network of pediatric oncologists, and it's a pretty small community. We all know each other. So I frequently will get emails about patients diagnosed with infant ALL, which is one of my areas of expertise, from amazing physicians throughout the country. It's not that they're not good physicians. They're fantastic physicians. They just may not see that diagnosis very frequently. Just along the same lines, I would like to add, you know, if your child has a diagnosis of cancer and has unfortunately relapsed, I think in particular, it's important to inquire about clinical trials that are available, because, you know, many times in the relapse setting, sort of standard of care is not going to be effective. And so it's important to find out if there are clinical trials with promising agents that your child may be eligible for. And it may be that there's a particular trial that they're eligible for that isn't necessarily in their best interest, and the physicians will usually discuss that with the families. But I do think when you have a child with relapse disease, it's very important to find out all your options, because it's difficult to cure those patients in the long run.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.